Welcome back to another Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by a longtime basketball and football beat reporter, Jim Polzin. And Jim, I'm done with it. I'm done with 2020. We got, 5 weeks of it left? I'm out. Yes. Full stop. This sucks. We are back to another canceled game. Minnesota had a COVID-19 outbreak. Very unfortunate for them. Hopefully they can all stay healthy. All that good stuff, but just rough that this game gets canceled. I think, Jim, you can tell me what you thought, but I think the second I saw that first tweet on Monday night about Minnesota canceling Tuesday's practice, I was like, nope, it's over.
Yeah, anytime that happens when they're not practicing during the week, I just think that was kind of a sign that of things to come. And the only good thing, I think, not good thing, I don't know how to describe this, that came out of this was, can you imagine if Wisconsin had beaten Northwestern and then this game gets canceled? The uproar would have been unbelievable and Twitter would have been worse than it even is usually. And I'm glad I didn't have to deal with that and you didn't have to deal with that. And none of us had to wade through that mess, because it would have been ugly and Minnesota fans would have been just filled with glee that they were the reason Wisconsin doesn't get the chance to play for the Big Ten, and Wisconsin would have been angry. And it just, I'm glad that storyline doesn't exist.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned that Northwestern game. We'll get into that kind of as we go through the podcast here. We'll be a little bit of a shorter one today, obviously with the holiday week. Jim's got a basketball game to get ready for, but quick show rundown for everybody. We're going to talk about this canceled game, kind of what went into it, and then now what comes next for the Badgers. Quickly talk about the Badgers, where they sit in the college football playoff rankings that came out on Tuesday night. Do our Big Ten picks, where Jim is just taking me to the woodshed. This is embarrassing. I need to lock in here. But we'll wrap up with some happier news. Like I mentioned, men's basketball starts tonight for the Badgers. Lots of excitement for this season, the top 10 team coming into the year. So lots of fun stuff there. So we'll get into all of that right after this. All right, like we said off the top of the show, canceled game, third one here for the Badgers in 2020. That puts them down to 5 games maximum in their regular season, which is going to eliminate them from being able to compete for the Big Ten championship game, like you mentioned off the top, Jim. At the time of this recording, I should say, the Gophers are dealing with 15 people in their program in the last 5 days testing positive for coronavirus, 9 players and 6 staff members. There are still more tests waiting to be confirmed. And at least in my recent experience, there has not been as many false positives with the antigen tests. I'm not sure if just the cases themselves have been more prevalent or if they've figured out something different with the testing. But it seems like there's been less talk about false positives and issues there. So if they think there are more positives in the Gophers program, there probably are at this point.
Yeah, and I'm glad they're throwing actual numbers out there and being transparent. I thought that was really important when Wisconsin went through its COVID outbreak, that, there were numbers out there that people could see. Because Minnesota, it seems like, has been dealing with this throughout the season, right? They've had a lot of guys missing, but we never actually heard why they're missing or what the actual COVID positive test numbers were. So, the fact that they put some transparency out there, I'm glad that there's something out there we can see.
Yeah. And it's been, the way Minnesota has been handling it is weird because, yeah, as you mentioned, they have not been direct about how many guys were out or when, why they were out, the timeline for their stuff. But then in press conferences, their coach PJ Fleck would kind of intimate, oh, he's out for 3 weeks and it's not an injury. Like, he would kind of drop these hints of like, oh, this is guys out for COVID. And it was weird how they handled it, in my opinion. But I think you are very right in saying they've been dealing with this all year. You go back to that opener against Michigan, they're down, multiple specialists, offensive linemen, all these guys that weren't hurt in training camp and just missed the big game to start the year. And it's been pretty much every week they've had somebody that was going to contribute for them miss a game or multiple games because of COVID. And that includes their coaching staff. Their offensive line coaches were going to be out this week. They're out last week. And then their defensive coordinator is missing games as well. So it's been kind of a slow trickle for the Gophers this year. And then now this past week has been kind of a flood.
Can I go off on a quick tangent here?
Please.
Purdue came out and said that, you know, their best defensive end, George Karlaftis?
Karlaftis, yep.
Okay. They came out and said he's got COVID. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
They made that announcement. I really can't understand why some schools are so open about it and specific, and some schools are like, oh, no, the privacy prevents us from saying that. If the player says it's okay, then you can come out and say it, right? And yeah, why would a player care is what I'm wondering. It's all very confusing to me, especially as a reporter. It just, you know, some schools have been very specific. Wisconsin basically, you know, doesn't want to get into specifics, although Paul Chryst basically came out and said that Graham Mertz had, you know, COVID-19.
Yeah.
So it's bizarre how these schools kind of dance around the privacy stuff.
Yeah, it is weird because if I'm a player, I catch it. And especially if you're a player that's, you know, doing the right things, you're wearing your mask, you're distancing, you're not doing anything wrong, and then it happens to get into your system somehow. I wouldn't want people thinking that, hey, I'm, you know, messed up, or I went to a party, or I did like X, Y, or Z. I would say like, hey, I've been doing all this right stuff and I still got it if I was a player. So yeah, it's very strange how these schools are handling it. And I get that the school shouldn't just get the positive tests and tweet it out like, oh, Graham Mertz is out this week. But if the player is like, yeah, that's fine. And people find out about it anyway, like when they see you not playing and they can see you're not like hurt or nothing happened to you that you shouldn't be out there. The assumption kind of becomes natural, but it's just been such a strange year. And I think that every school handles it differently and is kind of making it up as they go. And I think Wisconsin in general, I mean, we see how they deal with injuries throughout the years. Like, they're going to be a little more tight-lipped than others just from a general standpoint. And this kind of falls in that same category.
Right.
And I think you're right, though, that Minnesota deserves some credit now that they're being a little more transparent. But I think they've done as good, decent, or as good of a job as you can dealing with the slow kind of trickle of cases, like I mentioned before, because they haven't missed a game until now. You know, like they had multiple guys, and I know just from some of my reporting that they were frustrated watching Wisconsin cancel games with the number of guys that they've had out or they were going to have out when they kind of look at their roster and being like, hey, we have been dealing with this the same way that you guys are right now. And I mean, nothing was made public, but I know just from talking to some people that they were frustrated that it's like, if that's the bar to cancel a game, then we shouldn't have played at all. Like, I thought the idea here was to play. So I think Minnesota deserves a little credit for toughing it out as long as they've had. But, you know, obviously when you get the 5-day span where you're hitting that number, you can't. The thing that I thought was interesting, though, Jim, and I want to get your take on it. They didn't say if they were red or not. The implication last week was they were close to the level because, you know, if you read all of our reporting, the math gets weird when you don't know. There's so many variables in these equations, and the denominator of how many people are getting tested every day hasn't been made public by a lot of these schools. But then as you get some positive tests, that number goes down and down. And I think Minnesota was at a point where even just a couple of more tests, because their denominator was getting to a point that was so low, that a couple of tests was going to put them over that number.
Right. I mean, and then that's again where it would be really nice to have actual data to see for ourselves, right? To just to know, like, I love that they have these categories, red, orange, red. But it would be nice if there's a little bit more transparency to see where teams are at. Mm-hmm. Just to know. I mean, just so we can know. I mean, not so we can judge necessarily on whether they should or shouldn't play. That's their decision in consultation with the league. But it would be nice to see where schools are at. Where are they? What types of decisions are they making based on the data they have? That's it just, it's, there's so much uncertainty and unknown this with this in this pandemic, especially with sports being played. It's just, it's helpful to know as much information as possible.
Yeah. And it kind of goes to the accountability of the people in charge. Like, you know, if you run into issues later on down the line, having kind of that data to go back to. But just from an overall perspective, this stinks not only because it's a canceled football game and, you know, you've got kids that can play that can't now because of the situation, but it's Axe Week. You know, it's this game in particular, and it matters so much to these players and to these schools and to the people in these states. And I thought that was something that really came through in the couple of days of interviews we had with players this week, was that, you know, coming off a really tough loss, like, it was pretty quickly turn the page because this week matters more than anything. You know, obviously they want to win championships, but winning that Axe is, you know, almost equivalent to that for this program. And now they don't get the, well, we'll get into a second, but looks like they might not play that game and play that Minnesota rivalry.
Yeah. I mean, to go from a tough loss to the Axe would have been a pretty, I think, easy thing to kind of flip the switch. Now you're sitting out for a week, not playing football, and the Northwestern loss is just sitting there hovering over you even more. And the fact that you're probably not going to be eligible for the Big Ten tournament, even if you do catch some breaks down the stretch, that's sitting with you too. And so it's, I was on a radio interview earlier this week. One game has really changed the, how you look at this season, hasn't it? Right. I mean, like, things were so good. There was playoff talk, there was Big Ten title talk, and then one really crappy performance down in Evanston, and that's changed the outlook. And then boom, a couple of days later, you don't even get to play the next week. So I think I'm not shocked that this happened. I think we knew that their margin for error was pretty thin. Mm-hmm. Once Wisconsin had its two games called off on its own, you know, the chances of getting through the rest of the season without another team having to drop a game on their schedule was pretty thin, I think. I mean, mm-hmm. I try to be optimistic, but you got to be realistic. And I think it was pretty, the chances were pretty low, and boom, it just happens a couple weeks later with Minnesota.
Yeah. I kept using the analogy they were on a high wire act, you know, just hoping to take them step by step, hoping they can get to that six games. And then you lose that game. Now you're on one foot on the high wire, and then now you're tipped over with the Minnesota loss. So it's just tough. And I think everybody kind of, I shouldn't say think, I know everyone, the second the Big Ten schedule came out and there were no bye weeks, no chances for makeups and these rules, it was like, okay, anything goes wrong, it kind of crumbles down really quickly. And Wisconsin, now Minnesota, and I mean, Maryland even before that, have all kind of gone through it. So the Badgers will now have two more regular season games and then one that in that championship week, which we're going to get into in a second. But the two regular season games left are against number 12 Indiana here at Camp Randall, and then season wrap up down at Iowa in Iowa City. Two really tough games. And, you know, if there's any silver lining here, maybe having a bye week where you actually get to practice and get some guys healthy, like Kendrick Pryor, Danny Davis, try to get your offense kind of back on track after a tough showing at Northwestern. You're going to need them because you have to somehow match points with Indiana. Even if your defense is able to slow them down a little bit, that's a really good offense. And then you know what Iowa's going to be. It's going to be a tight game. It's going to be similar styles, and you're going to have to execute offensively against a solid defense. So if there's a silver lining, maybe a bye week to get ready for these two huge games to salvage whatever you can postseason-wise for this team might help out a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I think you get your bodies healthy and right is one, and then two, the coaches can get a head start on Indiana and game planning for Indiana. And I think that'll, like you said, their offense has a lot to deal with. I think an extra 3-4 days could prove beneficial. I mean, I know the guys were saying that before the Michigan game, was that they were able to start that preparation earlier than they would have. And I think that helped. I mean, they went into that game pretty prepared and are going to need to be even more prepared to beat this Indiana team. It's a good club. So, and you know, Iowa's found it, you know, they started off rough, but that's a team that's getting better. And you know, it's going to be a tough season closer. So tough schedule. Like I said, it's really changed the outlook of how you view this season. To go from 2-0 and title talk to 2-1 and two really tough games down the stretch, it's challenging.
Absolutely. And we've mentioned it a couple of times, it's championship week. There's already some talk going on. Mark Coyle, the athletic director of Minnesota, already kind of mentioned it last night, Tuesday night, during his press conference after they canceled the game. But there's a chance, things have to kind of fall in the right places here, but there's a chance the Badgers could play Minnesota that week, December 19th, in championship week. Because as we mentioned, Badgers aren't going to be able to play in the Big Ten title game. A, maybe not, because they're, you know, not in line to win it right now. Northwestern has controls their own destiny in the West, but then because they didn't play enough games to be eligible for it. So, you know, if everything shakes out how it kind of looks, let's say Wisconsin ends up second in the West, Indiana is going to be probably number two in the East. If you've already played that game, they've already said that they don't want to have as many too many rematches if they can avoid it. So it looked like an easy solution would have Wisconsin playing Minnesota that week, and then you either reschedule the Maryland-Michigan State game to kind of balance it out, or you make it work on the other side however you need to. But I think there's some life here. And then to me, I think that's probably the best outcome, because what does a crossover game look like, I don't know, Michigan State or somebody on the east side, if you're not going to play Indiana, really do for you? And then if you're the Big Ten's, like, the whole idea was to preserve rival. Like, you go back to throughout their scheduling, like, when they first had some bye weeks back in, what was that, September, August, when they had the schedule with bye weeks, the idea was to preserve the rivalry games and make sure they had as many chances they had to play those. So now you're looking at this, well, what's one more schedule tweak in a year full of them, right?
Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer to me, which maybe is the reason why it won't happen, because it's
yeah, obvious.
But knowing the Big Ten, it seems like the way to go. Like, really, who cares about the matchups once you get beyond one versus one, which would right now be Ohio State versus Northwestern. After that, I don't really care about matching two versus two and three versus three, especially if it's Wisconsin and Indiana and they played already. And, you know, maybe Wisconsin loses again to Iowa. So maybe it's Iowa, Indiana in that second game. And then even more reason to, you know, who cares about three versus three, whoever that would be, you know, Wisconsin versus, I don't even know who it would be. So yeah, to me, it seems like a no-brainer. Make that game as interesting as possible and make sure this rivalry gets played this year. It's just, it's a no-brainer. And let's not forget too, that Barry Alvarez holds a lot of sway in this conference.
Absolutely.
His voice is heard. So if this is something he wants, I think he would, you know, push for it and be able to, you know, to get it done. And it, again, like, I can't see anybody objecting to this. That matters. So, you know, it seems like something that should be pursued.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye on that. I mean, I wouldn't expect a decision to be made for a while, because I think the Big Ten's going to have to see how things shake out. Like, I mean, God forbid, let's say Northwestern wins the West, but then they get hit with COVID and they can't play. Like, who knows? Yeah. Like, there's so many scenarios. It's almost dumb to even try to make a plan at this point. If you're a conference, to just kind of play it out and see where you're at and then fit and figure it out as you go. But
that's a really good point. I had not even considered the fact that we get to championship week and then one of those teams can't go, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
which is actually very 2020. So
yeah, exactly. So we'll see where it all ends up. Make sure I'm Madison.com keeping up with all that stories and everything going on with this game being canceled and whatever happens next. But switching gears here, we'll talk quickly about the college football playoff. The initial rankings came out on Tuesday night. Wisconsin is number 16 in the first poll. That's up two spots from where they're at in the AP poll at number 18. The nice thing is, if you're a Badger fan, is that there are chances to climb up the rankings here, because both of your remaining games against Indiana, against Iowa, are ranked opponents. Indiana is number 12 in the college football playoff poll, and then Iowa is number 24. So, you know, if things break right for the Badgers and they were able to win two more games here, you're talking more than likely getting back up in the top 10. And then that puts you in line, you know, all things considered, for a New Year's Six Bowl, which given how the season's gone, getting back to that point, that you got to chalk that up as a win.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I still think New Year's Six bowls are big and should be considered big. And I know a lot of fans are grumbling after last week's loss about, oh, you know, this team has a clunker and it can't get over the hump of getting to that next level. And you know what? Totally fine to analyze that game and be disappointed by it. But there's still a lot to play for. And getting to a New Year's Six bowl should always be considered a big deal around here. It'd be a great way to kind of dive into 2021. You know, playing that game and possibly winning it, and you know, it'd be a springboard for next season. So, I think there's still a lot to play for, even though you lost the chance most likely to play for a Big Ten title at this point. These last two games, if they're played, are big. The championship week game, whoever it's against, will be big, and then you get a really quality opponent in New Year's Six Bowl. So, I don't think all is lost at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Cole Van Lannen, the senior tackle for the Badgers, said it really well on Tuesday, is that, you know, he was asked about Jalen Berger and Shamari DK and these freshmen that are doing some big things for the offense. And he said that the development of those guys and getting them a lot of reps is why playing football is so important this year. You know, so add that to, you're going to have those 3 weeks-ish of a bowl prep if you get to a New Year's Six. I mean, that's an important time. You talk to guys that have been around for a while, like those bowl practices are a lot of time to get yourself better and then kind of springboard, like you said, into the next year. And when you're looking at some young stars like Graham Mertz and Jalen Berger, Tamari DK, especially on offense, that's a chance for those guys to continue getting better. And then you launch yourself into a 2021 where, yeah, you've got a lot of turnover on the defensive side, but maybe your offense is now at a point where you've got a lot more guys to trust and a lot of faith in what you can do on that side of the ball.
I agree. I think bowl practices will be even more important this year because there was no spring.
Exactly.
Spring got wiped out and the offseason was abbreviated. So for a developmental program, I think they will gladly take these bowl practices and use them effectively because of everything they've lost from a development standpoint up to this point.
Sure. We didn't talk too much about the Northwestern game. Jim and I were both there. That was exactly what we both thought. I feel like it was going to be ugly. And then you get the news half hour before the game starts that Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor weren't going to play. And from that moment on, I was kind of like, if they win, like, it's super impressive, but I'm expecting a loss now.
Yeah, I just thought it was, I mean, I went from being pretty confident Wisconsin was going to win to thinking it was going to be a coin flip situation. And then, you know, after they scored to tie it up on the Mertz to DK long ball, I thought, okay, they've kind of overcome some stuff and they're going to be okay. And, you know, you and I think I told you this probably about 17 times on Saturday night, but I really thought the game switched. The game kind of changed when Wisconsin was deep in Northwestern's territory or relatively deep. They got to the 36. They had a third and one. They tried throwing the ball long instead of running the ball. Mertz got sacked, and then they opted to punt instead of go for it.
And yeah, 4th and 3.
I think Mertz was 9 of 10 at that point, if I remember.
Sounds right, yeah. He started pretty well, yeah.
So his numbers pre that play and post that play are significantly different. And I'm not saying that one play caused anything inside of him, but I do think you kind of turn to look at one play in the game and say that's kind of where the game switched. And just – it seemed like they were doing okay. And then after that, like they could not do anything. They couldn't consistently move the ball. When they got decent gains on first down, they'd shoot themselves in the foot with a penalty or something. They'd get in some 2nd and 6 situations and not do enough on second down to set themselves up for 3rd and short or move the chains. And it was like they were beating their head into a wall all game long. and you can get into some of the reasons you think maybe why that happened.
You know, I think in part you lose guys like Davis and Pryor, and obviously Krumholz and Dunn have really established their roles on this team as, you know, more often than not blocking wide receivers, really effective special teams guys, but asking those guys against a really good secondary to get consistently open and to be primary receivers, that's a bad formula. And then I think you saw Northwestern do everything they could to contain Jake Ferguson. Still ended up with 6 or 7 catches, but a lot of them were dump offs. And then they hit the crap out of him too. I mean, not that that's, you know, your game plan, you're always going to try to hit people, but Ferguson took some big shots and had to go in and out of the game a few times. And Hayden Rucci is just not quite there as a receiver yet to be the, you know, Ferguson replacement if he's not in there. And then Eschenbach came in as well, and he had a tough drop late in the second half. So I think that Northwestern A had a good game plan trying to take away Ferguson, because I would argue he's probably the most important receiver on the team. But then when you are then challenging a good secondary with, you know, receivers that just aren't quite at that level, it was just a bad formula all the way around for the Badgers with what they had to deal with. And I think you made a good point. They didn't help themselves a couple of times with some play calling and some decisions. And then defensively, I felt bad for the defense when we got into that third quarter, because what were there, 9 punts in the third quarter between the two teams? And then a couple of times the Badger special teams, Andy Vinovich, the punter, would pin Northwestern down, and the defense got 3 and out. And then the offense just went back 3 and out themselves. So it was just like the efforts and the ability to stay within that game after all the challenges just weren't really paid off. And eventually kind of the dam breaks, and a defense is playing it's out of its mind is just not going to be able to sustain that a whole game against a solid team. I mean, Northwestern's offense isn't going to, when they face other good teams, not going to be awesome. But that's the exact kind of game that Northwestern wants to play. Like, they're going to win it with defense and then make enough plays on offense. And I know that's occasionally Wisconsin's mindset and game plan, but just when they were shorthanded like that, it just wasn't going to work.
Right. I thought Mertz was off, which, again, he's a freshman. I don't want to – this was bound to happen at some point, right? And this is the best defense he's gone against. He probably needed to be perfect considering that he didn't have everybody around him, and he wasn't perfect. Like, a couple of his throws were just – a little bit off, and Northwestern did a good job of taking advantage when he was off. The other thing, and like, you know, I've really tried hard to stay away from bad calls and that being the reason, because I do think Wisconsin had plenty of time to make up for the what the calls were early in the game, right?
I mean, sure, I agree with that.
Good teams overcome that stuff. There was plenty of time, but went back and looked at that game, and I know you did too. Man, like it's when we're covering games, just people have to understand, when we're covering games, we don't often get the best angles. We're watching the TV version, but you know, we're moving back. Like, I had to move down by you to see a TV angle. So I was only seeing one replay as opposed to three. And we can kind of go through these. That catch along the sidelines that was replayed and then not overturned. Man, what did you think? Like, I can't believe
that. The saying that there was definitive evidence that he had control and a foot down, I didn't see it. And then by the time the second foot was out of bounds, I think that's when he had control. But yeah, that was a rough one to start with. And then, but that was the first drive, right? Or was that the second drive?
That was a second and like, I think that was like a second and 15, and they got like 12 or 13 yards on that. So it really gave them a chance to kind of keep the drive going.
Right. And then they had the pass interferences, which Caesar Williams was talking about on Tuesday, and he said some interesting comments about, you know, if the refs are wearing purple under their white and black shirts or some other things like that. But to me, that was a lot of those. I mean, Caesar Williams had an interception that was called off of for a pick or for pass interference, which to me, it's just, that's the way that Wisconsin has played outside all year long. And then for whatever reason, the refs decided that this was the week we're going to start calling it, because I think Wisconsin's defensive backs have been kind of coached up to, you know, be physical till the ball gets there, then play the ball. And that's really what they did. I think Scott Nelson's was probably okay. It might've been uncatchable, but he did impede the receiver's ability to come back toward it.
And that was really the receiver. I thought the receiver did a really great job of kind of setting
it
up.
Yeah, he sold it up too.
He totally sold it, and he slowed down just enough that Nelson ran into him. I mean, that's just Northwestern being smart.
Yeah, but I think Caesar Williams was a pass interference. That would have been the interception. And then the one that I think was actually the worst of the whole bunch was Rashad Wildgoose in the end zone on a third and goal. I think it was from the 3 or the 4. it was a jump ball to a big receiver who immediately comes up and makes contact with Wild Goose and then starts running with him to the end zone. I mean, Wild Goose has to return that contact or else he's just going to get shoved over. Like, and then they maintain that kind of hand fighting and jostling. To me, you watch that play 60 times on NFL Sundays where if a receiver is going to initiate the contact, they kind of get free reign after that. And I just thought that was a weak flag. And that was a huge play because then that set up a touchdown for Wildcats. So, I mean, the thing that I think is nice is that I don't think this is going to change how Wisconsin is going to play outside. I thought maybe they needed to change some things eventually in that game just because of how it was getting officiated. But I don't think when you go into the following or the next few weeks here that you're going to see anything different from these defensive backs, because I think their mindset was those were bad calls. Those aren't going to happen all the time. And we just have to play how we play.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, you can't coach it through a preseason and it can't be a philosophy. And all of a sudden you change on the fly. You just kind of have to hope. And I'm sure what happened Monday is that Paul Christ sent these video clips in, as he always does, to the league office and got clarification and a better idea of, hey, this is how we coach stuff. Why was this called? When, and I think you had said this, they were very physical in the Michigan game, right? Oh, very physical in the Illinois game, and they weren't called. So you want to see some consistency. And like you said, you can't let the offense get away with initiating the contact and then punish the defense. It's become almost impossible for the defense. And I would say this, like, you know, not just that game specifically, this could be me talking about a Wisconsin receiver going against a defensive back. You can't let the offense dictate everything and then punish the defense. It's unfair. And it's frustrating probably for the defensive back who's taught one way and then gets punished for it. The one call that was interesting to me that in real time and then watching the video is on Groshek's fumble, it looked like there was a face mask, right? It looked to me like an obvious face mask. Blame. But I will say this, when watching that game again, Groshek doesn't say a word.
Yeah, I know. That surprised me.
So I didn't know if it was an optical illusion and maybe he was grabbed by the shoulder pads or something and it wasn't the actual face mask or helmet. I don't know. But typically if something like that happens, the guy is pleading with the officials that he missed something and Groshek just kind of walked off the field.
It's possible. I mean, I thought it was pretty clear. Watching it again, I think you're right that the guy was going for the shoulder pad, but I think his fingers got face mask. And I mean, you're not going to see a running back looking to his right while running left like right. Groshek was. So I thought that was strange too, but I think you're probably right too. I don't know why Groshek wouldn't have, maybe that's just him, Groshek being who he is, but usually if you get face masked, you're coming up and you're signaling to the ref. You're kind of making sure that that's known. Just some tough breaks to that game, but I think you said it right off the top, Jim, that Wisconsin had more than enough opportunities to overcome these things. And, you know, all the pass interferences that we're saying were the most questionable were, you know, first half or early enough in the game that Wisconsin had multiple possessions to make up for it and kind of overcome that, but they didn't. And I think there's a lot of credit from Wisconsin given to Northwestern for how they played and everything like that. But you look at 5 turnovers and, you know, not seven penalties, just not executing the offense as they have in the past. I think there's a lot of feeling that Wisconsin kind of gave that game away. And I honestly believe that there was some, I'm trying to think of the right wording of it, but there's the mentality of like, oh, Evanston's always a dogfight. Like, we always play like crap here. And then it kind of just became like a self-fulfilling prophecy that they just had a terrible game in Evanston.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm sure that weighs on these guys' minds, right? They hear it all week. Some of them have lived it. They've played there 2 years ago. So they know the history. And I think in those scenarios, the best thing you can do is go down and get a good start early, right? And just get the thought out of your mind. Well, what happens?
Three outs.
Doesn't have the opposite of a good start. And things really start getting stacked against you early in the game. And then I'm sure it's tough to get out of that haze.
Yeah.
And it seems to be what happened.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's jump into Big Ten picks here. Good recap of the Northwestern game. As I mentioned off the top, Jim is killing me in these. Let's see, the record. I am 10-19-2. Yikes. And Jim is 15-14-2, back over 500 for Jim. Let's see if he can keep it rolling. This week's got kind of a weird slate. Obviously, now with the Badger-Minnesota game not happening, we've got a Friday game. Nebraska is going to Iowa. Iowa is a 13.5-point favorite, and we are both on Iowa, Jim. I think Iowa is starting to figure some things out, and they can run the ball. It's weird to think that that was a struggle the last couple of years, but they just haven't consistently done it well to at least Iowa standards. They're doing it this year, and they're figuring it out on defense, and Nebraska's kind of a mess. I can't believe how they looked against Illinois last week, going back and watching some of the clips and just the absolute pounding Illinois laid on them. So I think we're both on Iowa covering 14 points there, or 13.5 points there.
Yeah, to me, this is one team going trending upward, another team continuing to trend downward, and the one going in the right direction is at home. So I had no problem, you know, laying two touchdowns essentially for this game.
Sure. Next game, now we're on the Saturday slate. Penn State's going to Michigan. Michigan is a 2-point favorite. I'm sure when the schedule was released, whichever network is getting this, either it's ABC or whoever else, was like, sweet, we got this huge game Saturday after Thanksgiving, and now both these teams look like garbage, and Penn State's got a whole lot of quit all over them, and all these rumors are flying about James Franklin, his future there. So we are both on Michigan covering two, and I never like laying points with this Michigan team just because they're not good, but I think Penn State's just worse and doesn't seem to be interested in playing this year.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that's why that number seemed really low to me. Even though it's Michigan, like, this seems like a game should be like right around 4.5 or 5. I don't see any reason to believe why Penn State would go in there and be competitive. It's ugly there. And so even though Michigan didn't win pretty last week, it was a win. And I think that got a little bit of a monkey off its back, and, you know, they can build off it.
Right. And I think the formula, if you had to come up with one for Penn State this year or this week, is because Michigan's had so much health issues at their tackle spots. Let's say Shaka Toney just has some type of monster game, is just in the backfield all over the place. That to me, the only way and create some turnovers. That's the way that Penn State is able to keep it close here. But I think Michigan, Michigan finds a way here, just because I think you said it well there, that the monkey's off their back a little bit after a terrible couple of weeks, and try to keep it rolling against Penn State. We'll move on here to Maryland going to Indiana. Indiana is an 11.5-point favorite. We are both on Indiana, although I don't love that number because I think this Indiana defense can be scored on. I think that, especially with the way that Maryland plays, they're going to look at that Ohio State footage. Obviously, they don't have the athletes Ohio State does, but they've got a lot of the same concepts and kind of spread it out. And I think that Indiana still finds a way to win, but I'm nervous about a backdoor cover here from Maryland.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, Maryland can score too. I mean, they have some threats. But again, like, I was even in defeat last week, I was impressed by Indiana. Their ability to keep that game going. I mean, they're legit. And we were talking beforehand, Michael Penix is a Heisman candidate, right? He might be the best player in the conference, which is saying something. He's so young. So I like Indiana to cover in this game.
I think the thing that impressed me most about Indiana is that game started off terribly for them. I think It was 3-and-out, immediate touchdown, right? 2-play touchdown drive for Ohio State, and then immediate or 3-and-out. So it was like just off the bat going terrible. But then the defense makes a play, gets an interception. They battled back and forth. Then they're down 21, I believe, in the second half.
Yeah,
and
it got to the point of no return in the second quarter, definitely.
Yeah, and then they storm all the way back. I think that's probably the most encouraging thing is that in a tough situation on the road against Ohio State, they come back and make into a game. That kind of shows the toughness that team has. So I think, like I said, Indiana, I think, wins that game, but I'm just a little bit nervous about backdoor cover. But moving on to Ohio State going to Illinois. This is where we start disagreeing, Jim. Ohio State is a 28-point favorite. You are on Illinois. I'm on Ohio State. I know Illinois had a great week last week. I just think that this Ohio State defense will be a little bit upset about how they played against Indiana. I don't think Illinois has the same firepower, and I think they don't let that comeback happen. So I'm going to say they're going to cover that 28.
Yeah, I mean, I think this game will be right around 28, four touchdowns. So this is a tough one to pick for me. And the thing I agree with you on is Ohio State's now heard all week that and the playoff rankings reflected this, that their victory over Indiana was quote unquote unimpressive, right? I mean, because they only won by 7, they kind of struggled in getting there, even though we, just like we just said, this is a really good Indiana team. So I do worry that Ohio State's going to come out with something to prove and try to put a big number up. But I, you know, the thing I'm kind of relying on here is Illinois seems to be getting better, and they did the same thing last year. They got better under Lovie Smith. So if there's anything to that program, is that, you know, they do get better as the season goes along. So I think maybe they can keep this game, you know, within relative, you know, close range.
Now you're making me nervous. That's a really good point. I'll keep it, but I think you
can change. Like, as we know, as we know, people can change within picks. It just doesn't always work out very well.
That was funny last week. But all right, next one here, we got Northwestern going to Michigan State. Northwestern, top 10 team in the college football playoff poll and the AP for the first time ever. Both of those polls, I should say, not just AP. But 13.5 point favorites against Michigan State on the road. I'm going with Northwestern mostly because I think this is a shutout. I don't think Michigan State scores. The way that defense played and the way that secondary plays, I just don't see a lot of ways Michigan State moves down the field against them. So I'm going to say they cover that 13.5.
Yeah, you're probably right. 17-0 or 17-3 seems like a ideal, like the probable score here. My only thinking, I took Michigan State, and the reason why is Northwestern's coming off a big win, a physical game, and I just wonder if there's going to be a carryover where they're a little slow out of the gates and they're going to have to stumble. And I don't think they're going to lose this game by any means, but I just think, you know, somewhere winning by 10 is kind of what I was going with
when I made this. So I thought we had mentioned it when we were talking about the Wisconsin game with Northwestern, but Peyton Ramsey didn't have the greatest stat line and he had a couple of big throws, but I think the thing he did most effectively was not get sacked. Wisconsin was coming after him all the time. And they knew, I think like Jim Leonard and the defense knew, like, we've got to make some type of play here with a strip sack or, you know, force him into an interception with pressure. And he just didn't let it happen. And that's a credit to the quarterback because they had some free rushers. They had blitzes that got home. He just got the ball out fast enough that didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask me who I want, like if going to that game or even after the game, who I want as a quarterback, Graham Mertz or Peyton Ramsey, I take Graham Mertz every time. Right. Sure. But Peyton Ramsey, outplayed Graham Mertz in that game. And I don't even know if it was so much outplaying him as he didn't make the mistakes that Graham Mertz made. And that's what you got to do. Like, if you've got a really good defense, you just have to avoid mistakes and move the chains on third down at times. And, you know, that Ramsey did what he did. We talked about this last week. The difference this year with Northwestern, a big difference is they have a functional quarterback and they've got a guy they can count on. And he made some big throws. The throw at the end of the first half, I mean, that touchdown was huge. That was a that was a game changer in terms of going into halftime with momentum and changing kind of how the game looked. And he made a really good throw on that play. And so it's, I don't know that he was a world beater, but he was enough to get a win. I know quarterback wins is a stupid stat in a lot of ways, but last week's game kind of showed, you know, that if you do what it takes to get wins, that's acceptable. And that's what he did.
No, I totally agree with you. All right, last one here. Rutgers going to Purdue. Purdue is an 11.5 point favorite. I got jobbed last week, by the way. Or yes, we both did. We were both on Purdue going to Minnesota. That pass interference call.
No, we weren't. Oh, I took the Gophers.
Yeah. Well, I got jobbed.
You got jobbed.
Yeah. I think that was a kind of an omen for a rough weekend for Big Ten officiating when Purdue's should have been game-winning touchdown against Minnesota got called back on a phantom offensive pass interference call. I think offensive pass interference isn't called enough, but there was nothing there. I couldn't believe that one. But Purdue is at home here. I just think that when you have Rondell Moore back and David Bell, that they can put up some points. I know Minnesota's defense isn't very good, but even with their backup quarterback, they were just moving the ball up and down the field offensively. And as solid as I think Rutgers is as a team, I think or Purdue finds a way to win this game by 2 touchdowns.
I agree, and I think they're going to be angry too, just because of that play, the aforementioned bad call up in Minnesota. I think they'll come out and make a statement.
You're on. All right, so there we go.
Right, I took Purdue, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. I read it wrong. I flipped it around. All right, so that is the Big Ten picks for the week. We will be back with those next week. Probably examining me being terrible again. We'll see. But as we get toward the end of the show here, we want to talk about some basketball because, as we mentioned off the top, top 10 team here for the Badgers, starting off their year. Eastern Illinois coming to the Kohl Center tonight. Jim, do you think Greg Gard decides to, take out some frustration for everybody in Wisconsin that the Axe game is canceled and just puts a whooping on Eastern Illinois?
I think the players will – I think that if they whip Eastern Illinois, it'll be more of the players having all this built-up energy and angst from last season, not being able to play basketball for so long, right? And their season ended so abruptly last year that I think they're just anxious to go on the court. We had a Zoom with Greg Gard earlier this week, and he said – the guys are sick of going against each other. It's kind of like football late in preseason camp where guys are just sick of going to each other. There's skirmishes because you're sick of looking at the same guy in practice every day. They want some new blood. And so I do think I'm anxious to see how it looks. Like, no fans, it's going to be weird. And I think I'm gonna write about this a little bit later for the game since it's such a late start, but Micah Potter compared it to an 8 a.m. AAU game, right? Where yeah. You have to kind of manufacture your own energy. And I just think that's what it's going to be like. It's going to be weird.
Depending on where they sit, you guys, you might hear more in-game communication, like adjustments, things of that nature than ever before in your career.
Yeah. I mean, the one, I've always said this, the one place I love covering games the most is East Lansing at the Breslin Center. Because they seat us right on the baseline and it's right adjacent to the Wisconsin bench. So you can hear Greg Gard talking to the officials. You can hear him talking to his own players. You just get such a better idea of the game from down there than you do at, say, the Kohl Center or other places where we're so high up, like Indiana, where I'm in a different zip code. I'm so far up in the air. So I don't know where they'll sit us. They might have already thought about that and will put us far away from the court. But you'll still be able to hear stuff. I mean, you're not gonna be able to block out the noise. So I'm very curious. And I didn't really ask this, but I don't know if their communication has changed because of that. Cause if we can hear them, can the other team hear stuff and does that matter? This season is very unique for a lot of reasons. And that's one of them.
Absolutely. I think this question's kind of going around college basketball right now, as we see, I mean, basketball is not going to be immune to COVID whatsoever here. We've seen a number of big games and preseason attempts here at, tournaments or invitationals not work because of cancellations and COVID stuff. Do you think it's worth it to play some of these non-conference games? Because I think there's a thought, and I feel like I'm in this camp, but I want to hear your take on it, that these games are going to risk you being able to complete your conference season. And that's what really matters, especially here in the Big Ten. If you have a good record in the Big Ten, you're going to make the NCAA tournament. And I don't think, at least besides the ACC challenge for the Big Ten, that there aren't that many non-conference games that are going to sway you one way or another resume-wise in this conference right now. So do you think it's worth it to play these games, knowing the risks that you're taking, traveling or bringing some other teams in?
Yeah, I think there's two schools of thoughts, and I understand yours, and I'm not saying it's the wrong one. I think if you're a coach, you want to get some games in because you've had no secret scrimmage, you've had no exhibition. So you want to see what you are dealing with and can work on leaning into the conference season. I do think I don't know that you run the risk of your program shutting down from playing these games necessarily, but there's going to be chaos. There's going to be games canceled and stuff. But I just think, I talked to another coach yesterday, and the school of thought from the coaches is that start this season as early as possible and get in as many games as possible And then if you have to extend the season later, you can do that, right? If, if the season goes into April or May, maybe you do that. But let's get some games in while we can, even though the pandemic is raging, certainly, and doesn't appear to be getting any better. I just think that's their reasoning, is they want to try. They want to try to get some games in and do it safely. Like, I think Wisconsin's protocols and you know, like I wrote the story today, that's on Madison.com. Teams have to test 3 times a week, and any positive test in the 2 weeks leading up to a game means that person can't play and essentially puts that program on pause and would cancel the game. Illinois, once they got here yesterday, had to test, and Wisconsin, the Big Ten pays for that testing. The teams will test again today, 2 to 6 hours before tip off. And again, a positive test wipes out the game. So they're doing everything they can to make sure that there's not a positive case within the bodies that'll be on the floor tonight. So they're trying, and so I get that. I get what they're trying to do. The Big Ten, you know, I had this in my story too. Big Ten coaches met like weekly and sometimes twice a week for forever now. Some coaches wanted a 26 game Big Ten schedule. So you can play 26 league games and have the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and there's your 27 games. And it was voted down, and you can probably figure out why and who didn't want it. If you're a Northwestern or a Nebraska, do you want to play 26 Big Ten games?
Yeah, do you want to go like 2-23 or whatever?
Yeah, 4-23 or 5-22 at best. And you kind of go up the chain, Penn State's, you know, from worst to first, and you can see why they won't want to do that. The teams in the middle, you know, if you go 12-14 in league play, you're not going to get in the Big Ten tournament, even though 12-14 in league play wouldn't be awful in this league, right? So I get it. There's just a lot of, there's so many variables, and, yeah, and it's got to be impossible to make decisions.
The number one thing that I don't like about my, you know, kind of feeling on this is that Rick Pitino agrees with me. So I automatically think that this is probably the wrong take that I have if Rick Pitino's on that side. So you mentioned your story on Madison.com about the scheduling and all the testing. Jim's got a ton of great stuff on men's basketball on Madison.com right now. 10 things to watch for this season gives you a great kind of primer for this year. I read it yesterday and was just like, man, I feel so much more ready to watch some basketball and kind of where this team's at and what it's going to look like. And then plus coming from lacrosse last year, getting to watch almost all of Johnny Davis's prep career for football and basketball. I'm so excited to see what he can do at the college level.
I mean, like, that's, you know, not to interrupt you, but no exhibition and no, I didn't get a chance to watch a single practice, robbed me of the chance to see these freshmen, and Johnny Davis especially is a guy that I think can help this year in some capacity. And I'm, if you ask me who I'm most anxious to see tonight, it's Johnny Davis.
Yeah. And the thing that I think that will help him be able to, you know, obviously he's got to figure out the on the court stuff, but mentality wise and competitiveness wise, he's a college level athlete. Like, he's got that kind of dog in him to go after guys and not be afraid of it. So I'm excited to watch that. But I wanted to give you a chance to tell people about this story, because I know you did a lot of reporting on it. You went back and found a bunch of guys and players from Greg Gard's first ever basketball team. And it wasn't a high school, it wasn't high school level. It was what, junior high, eighth graders?
Eighth grade, yep.
Yeah.
Eighth grade.
So, I mean, just walk us through like what spawned the idea and how you kind of went about it.
Honestly, the foundation for the story was laid last March leading to the Big Ten tournament. Wisconsin had just clinched the conference title. And I probably wasn't even thinking about the story beforehand. Like, if they win the title, I want to do a story, because I knew it would be, if they won the title, Greg Gard would be Big Ten Coach of the Year, which I thought was an amazing story in a really challenging year for him. And I'd kind of been thinking about doing this story on how he got his coaching start, which I've hinted at over the years in different stories, but never actually was specific to the Southwestern. So I reached out, I actually did one of the interviews last March, and then kind of, I'm glad that it didn't run, because I've kind of had a chance to talk to more people, and I think it's a better story because of it. So 1990, he had just been cut from the, UW-Platteville baseball team. He was 19 years old, decides he wants to go into coaching. He picks up the local shopper down in Grant County or whatever. And there's a spot for an eighth grade team at Southwestern School District, which For those that don't know, it hovers on the Wisconsin-Indiana border. It actually stretches out. It's adjacent to the Iowa border too. It's in Hazel Green, tiny Hazel Green, Wisconsin. He got the job. So I talked to the guy that hired him, Bill Taylor, who now is not athletic director anymore. But he just talked about how he's, what he saw in Greg. I talked to two players who played on that team, and they admit, hey, we were eighth graders, and we were a little bit mischievous. We were not a real good group to deal with. And the thing that they thought Greg Gard showed even back as a 19-year-old coach was patience, and just the ability to be patient with them and teach. And so, go back and read that story. It's I thought it turned out well. I was happy with it. Ended up catching up with Bo a little bit, because shortly after the Southwestern gig, Greg Gard would work some Platteville camps and caught the eye of Bo. And I wanted to know from Bo, like, what did you notice about him? And I'm happy. The reason we did this story for Thanksgiving was because our Thanksgiving Day deadlines, our Wednesday deadlines essentially today are so early that we can't even get tonight's game in the paper. We wanted some sort of placeholder, and I think this would be a good one. It's Greg Gard, 30 years in the business, and he was a guy who made $705 back in 1990, and look where he ended up now. He's making a couple million a year. Reigning Big Ten Coach of the Year.
And one could argue that as a head coach, this is the best team that he's got coming back and going into a obviously weird year, but going into a year with a lot of expectations. So really excited for everybody to see that one. Go on Madison.com, check it out, or pick up Thursday's paper for that story as well. Let's wrap up the show here, Jim. I wanted to ask you, what's Thanksgiving like over at the Polzine's house?
Lonely. We decided my family's actually going to go up quickly and social distance see my wife's family, just because, it's been a while. And so I'm going to be on my own, which is okay. Like I got, my game starts at 9 o'clock tonight. I'm going to be home late, and I'm going to have to probably watch the game in the morning and write some sort of follow. I've got a ton of work to do for upcoming games. So I told my wife, don't feel bad. I'll be fine. I'm going to go out and I got a favorite barbecue place. I'm going to go out and get that meal today and hold it for tomorrow and just warm it up. So I'm good. It's weird. Like, I think we've only had one Thanksgiving here on our own. I can't remember why. It was probably 5-10 years ago. Typically we're at a family's house and they're doing all the cooking. And so I have to worry about it more, but you're cooking on your own this year.
I am. So this is weird, man. So like Thanksgiving at my parents' house was pretty much most of the extended family at our place, and a massive amount of food. So I'm trying to do like a scaled down version of that. I'm doing like the whole turkey and all that stuff. And the way my parents did it was they would brine it. So I'm attempting to do that today, and then grilling it. So a whole lot of stuff going on. And then I don't think I factored in the elements of it's going to be 40 degrees out, as opposed to where my parents live in Texas, which is, probably 75 today. We'll see how it all goes. If anything, mashed potatoes are always good, and stuffing's going to taste good. So we can make it work outside of that. But, the fiance has very little faith in my ability to do this. She hasn't said it outright, but I see just little eye rolls and little suggestions like, yeah, well, all right, we'll see. We'll see. So,
hey, low expectations is good. I mean, like going in, it'd be very easy to exceed expectations. If she's got high expectations, and then the pressure's on. So I think that's the way to go.
I like that. That's a good point. But for everybody that's listening, sorry for kind of a bummer start to this this podcast with the canceled game and everything, but lots of good stuff coming throughout the weekend on Madison.com and for all of our coverage. It's always fun to see Jim getting to the basketball and football grind here. Watching this basketball team should be pretty fun this year. So make sure you're on Madison.com.
By the time we do our next podcast next week, Wisconsin, in theory, should have played 3 games with the basketball team. So Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, and it'll be leading into Marquette. So, I mean, I hope that happens. I'm crossing my fingers, but it's crazy how this schedule is just bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, Jim Polzine, WSJ for Jim, CBart, WSJ for me. Lots good stretch here of downloads and listens to the podcast. So thank you guys very much for that. Have a great Thanksgiving, and thank you very much for listening.